Hello, I am Anika Orok, author of The Incredible Women of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, and you are listening to the fabulous Baseball and Barbecue podcast with Jeff and Len.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast, and you're listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away.
This is a song of Wisconsin. Blue is her sky.
Welcome to episode number 68 of Baseball and BBQ. I am Len Aberman, and I am here with my incredibly talented co-host,
Jeff Cohen. And you are so right on with that description. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. We are two excited hosts bringing you Baseball and BBQ. We have the continuation of Ricer, who, if you heard our episode 67, you know that he has a video. He has a YouTube channel, Dead Broke Barbecue. Also,
Tavern Talk. Right.
And he's just very talented. Jeff, I've been watching some of his videos even more than I had watched, you know, prior to our interview. He's funny. He's talented. I really think that we made a great discovery. I think we've discovered a great talent.
And he's
going to thank us for you know, everyone's going to thank us for discovering this great talent named Ricer.
Yeah, he's great. And I like the way on Sunday night when he has his Tavern Talk, he interacts with the people on YouTube. You can put comments in the comment section and he begins to be right on the video. It's really cool.
Yeah, I do too. And the fact that he could just sit there and converse with everyone and keep you interested when he's just sitting there, basically, and people are coming and going, and it's really interesting. Enjoy him very much.
Yep.
And then after Ricer, and after you and I do some things that we haven't done in a while, we are going to have on D.B. Firstman, author of Hall of Name, which is a great book, very interesting book. In the interview, I told D.B. how much I enjoyed the book.
Yes, and we should tell everybody that we did the interview prior to the baseball season. So if you hear some references in there, if there's a baseball season, this was done prior to baseball season. And this is absolutely a great book. DB goes back into the origin of names and really unique take on these players that, you know, most of them you never heard of, but their names you'll never forget.
And before we do Ricer, before we get to Ricer, and before we get to DB, can I just say something you just mentioned? And we could go on and on about this, and I know I'm going to open a big can of worms here, but we said prior to the baseball season, this baseball season is just, to me, it's an exhibition season. But am I opening a can of worms here? Can we talk about it after Ricer?
We'll talk about it after Ricer.
Okay.
And we pick up Ricer in the interview. We talk about his Facebook page and a barbecue that he has called the Oklahoma Joe's. So enjoy this part two of Ricer. So, Ricer, I'm looking at your Facebook page, and it's called Dead Broke BBQ. Everybody should go ahead and check it out. I'm looking at a post. You posted a Oklahoma Joe's. I never saw this type of cooker before. Could you tell us a little bit about that one?
The Bronco? Are you talking about the Bronco, the little barrel cooker?
It looks like a little barrel with a side tube on the side there.
Yeah. That is their style of, like, let's say, a gateway drum smoker. Pretty efficient little cooker, and I haven't had a ton of cooks off of it. I think I've cooked about 12 times on it now. I've got a video that I'm editing right now with doing some baby back ribs on it. And I threw my Ultra Q in there just because we're at 4th of July and I wanted to make sure, because I had to be done at a certain time with my buddy and all that. That is just a kind of a copycat. It's kind of a hybrid, let's say. I'm going to say hybrid with this one, of the Barrel House and the Pit Barrel. it kind of takes both things. You can grill on it pretty simple. You just kind of throw that heat deflector in a different position. You can, it's got bars. You can hang ribs on it. It's a really cool little cooker, and it's inexpensive. It's not as expensive as the Pit Barrel is. You know, Pit Barrel is a good cooker. You throw stuff in there. I used to get so pissed when I'd watch people on YouTube, and they're like, I put my signals in there, and it's running 285. What the heck? Well, that's a garbage can, man. You throw your stuff in there, and when it's done, it's done. It's how it is, you know.
It's true.
But this little Bronco, you can adjust it. Now, they have the Bronco Pro that they kind of push more for the comp guys. That's a little bigger. Because this is just an 18-inch, and their Pro is – well, it must be 22 is one of my best educated guesses. But yeah, you got your intake and you got your stack. So it's pretty simple. You to dial it in. I have friends that have it. You know, the funny thing about the greatest thing in the world is I have all my friends. I moved back to my hometown, let's say. You know, I moved back. Years later, I moved back. So I have a few friends around here and we hang out all the time. They're not big barbecuers. A couple of them are, but not most of them. I've learned and met a lot of people from the Facebook groups that I can actually kind of say I've never shook their hand, COVID-19, but I've never actually met them. But we've become really good friends and we share our knowledge. And I still will tell you, I'm a backyarder. You know, hey, I'll tell you what beers to grab. You know, I'm sponsored by a wine company. I'll tell you what wine you're serving brisket. Well, let's get a good, you know, Sauvignon Noir, you know, let's get it, you know, let's get a Cabernet, you know, let's pump it up, you know, so I can tell you that type of stuff. But I've learned and became good friends with a lot of different people that love barbecue. And a couple guys have told me that cooker will cook 14 to 15 hours, no problem, with a very small charcoal basket. Now you can get the mods and buy the little bigger charcoal baskets. There's a guy, I can't think of his name. It's like Slide Hand. So that's what's cool about when you buy a new cooker. It's not just the cooker. It's like all the accessories and all these different things that you can add to it. I want a cooker. If I buy it and it comes out of the box, it better cook. I want it to cook. But if I really like this cooker, then I want to add something else to it. You know, that's how I look. You know,
yeah, but I see that. I see you add the Ultra Q on this Oklahoma Joe's, and yes, that must have come from BBQ Guru because I know that they sell it over there. We're good friends with them.
Yep, Bob sent it to me, and it was a pleasure. I always wanted one. I did a Weber kettle cook with a brisket, and it was so incredible how that control. I've never had a controller. Let's face it. I'm not a comp guy. I don't have to worry about, you know, the walk and check-ins and all that. So it's like, I still, like, my friends will come over and I'll say, well, come around 5 o'clock. And they'll come in. Hey, what time are we eating? Can't rush good barbecue. I can still use
that. The Winston, you know? You're right. I like that. Right.
You know, so, but in all reality, there is certain things. Well, that controller made that brisket cook. I mean, literally, I was twiddling thumbs. I was sitting there going, can I do something? No, I don't have to do nothing. I don't have to change my dampener setting or my vent setting at all on this Weber kettle. One time, just set it and forget it. My video with me drilling through it, my buddy and I drill through this Weber kettle. It's so hilarious. It's freaking one of the best things ever. Bob called or sent me a text. He's like, I'm so sorry. I should have told you to buy a step down drill. No, dude, this is real life. When people buy crap and they start messing with it, they make mistakes. I made a mistake. I didn't pay attention. So I'm putting this video up so people can realize that I'm human. I can make a video make me look like Superman. But this thing came through and me and my buddy screwed up. We drilled the whole saw, walked all over, scratched up the whole kettle on the inside. Oh, well. Grab some paint or just drill it through it and leave it. Let it rust up. You know, it's a cooker. It doesn't matter. So, you know, but really 100% that guru thing, if you don't have one, and I don't get paid by those guys to say anything. If you don't have one, get one. But it's probably going to cost twice as much as your cooker. You know?
Jeff, I've got to, I wanted to tell him this before when we were talking about the pit barrel and he would mention the ribs dropping in. And then you asked a couple questions, but I got to just tell him my confession. I just can't. We had an episode and Jeff was the priest. And I made a confession, and I'm gonna confess again right now. I don't know what makes me want to confess, but I have to.
Right.
You mentioned the pit barrel, mm-hmm. and love it. But one day I'm making ribs in it, and I wanted them to be super tender.
Sure.
And yeah. I get them to the point where they're tender, but I'm thinking, oh, I'll keep going. I'll make them more tender. And, you know, we're bringing them over to my mother-in-law's, and we're going to have some food over there. So I'm like, let me go. I smell like, you know, I smell like smoke. Good smell, but
yeah,
let me
good
go
smoke.
Shower.
Yeah.
I run in. I take a shower. I come outside, and there is an incredible amount of smoke coming from this pit barrel. And there shouldn't be because we're at the near the end of the cook, and it is smoking like crazy. And I open this lid. And the smoke just goes up in my face, and I can, and I'm like, you know, and I see through the smoke just a couple of hooks with like little meat remnants on. And where are the ribs? They fell right down in the fire. So I know of what you said before, and I got greedy, as Jeff said, you got greedy, you did it too much. So I know exactly what you're saying. And so now I'm very careful with that. I'll go really low. I'll go like 3 or 4 bones down and I'll curl it over.
Right.
And maybe even I'll double hook it.
Yeah.
Because it does. Yeah. So that is, I know I've said that before. Listeners of this show are going to say I'm repeating myself, but.
It's a good story though. I'm glad you shared it with me, man. You know?
Yeah. It's, and of course, Jeff gave me a hard time, but lo and behold, a few weeks later, Jeff did it.
Yes. I'm going to tell you a little trick. Okay. On the pit barrel after that time I did it, you know, I mean, literally I cooked two cooks of ribs before that before I did my video. And I thought, okay, I can do this, you know, it's not a big deal. And it's funny because I did kind of, I had one that I knew was really close, but it's like, you know, I don't remember if I had 6 ribs in there or only 3. I mean, I have to go back and watch the video. And one goes down and I'm like, man down, you know, and I just put my arm right down in that barrel because like after you've cooked enough, I mean, who cares? I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been told that, you know, hey, redneck, you should probably like, you know, worry more about your safety and all that. And it's like, you know how many times I have done things around fire in a pit. I'm probably breaking OSHA rules, but oh well.
You know? You would think so.
Yeah. So, but I threw my arm right down there and it singed my hair and I grabbed it and pulled it right out. And it was still good because it wasn't down there very long. You know, it was just, but it had a little extra char and I'm like, hey, these are kind of good. But the rest of them turned out decent. But here's a trick. I started doing this after on the pit barrel. I started double hooking them and then flipping them. I would cook them for 1 hour and then pull the hooks out and then flip them on the other side. And that actually, I haven't had one split off yet. So I haven't had one split off. I've seen other guys that leave the membranes on it when they're doing the hanging ribs. You know, I call them hanging ribs. Who knows why the hell I call them it, but I call it that. These are hanging ribs, you know, and probably because I didn't do it ever. When I never did a barrel until I bought that, you know, so the hanging thing, rotate those hooks, throw them on the other side and flip them over. A little bit more work, but give them 1 hour one way and then flip them over the other. But really, you can cook if you're cooking in a pit barrel, 3-ish hours, those ribs are done. You know?
Oh yeah.
You'll never, I tried to tell my buddy that one time when I did them, I said, well, sometimes the middle bone, it's probably not going to be that bite off, snap off from there. It's going to, you know, it doesn't quite, But if you wrap them, well, then you, like this video that's coming out pretty soon, I wrapped them. They're good. Man, perfect. You know, hang them for a few hours and then wrap them up. But it's harder to stack them in a pit barrel. In that Oklahoma Joe's, you got a little bit more of a hood, you know, that it's got a little bit of a
Yeah, so right. When you wrap them, there's not as much room. But when you put your arm down, you got the two bars, and those bars get hot too. So you're putting your arm down, not only, first of all, I know, you know, you got a lot of smoke coming out because the meat hits the coals. You're putting your arm down. You got the two bars on either side, which get hot.
Yep.
And you're reaching down into, you can't see where you're reaching.
No.
So you're a little dangerous there.
A little bit.
A wild man.
If you watch some of my older videos, and I don't have that many. I don't know if I have even 60 cooks or so, 70 cooks. You know, I mean, I've got a little bit with my show. I don't even know if I have 50. I don't count, to be really honest with you, fellas. I mean, I really don't. But I will tell you that when I have a charcoal chimney, I tell everybody, set this thing aside because this thing is hot. Because one time I took that charcoal chimney, dumped it in my kettle, and set it right down on the ground, and I literally fried my ankle like some third degree crazy dumbass burn. You know, sorry for swearing, but it was really a dumb move. And I punched myself something serious. I mean, it hurt. And so that's why, you know, there's like things that I try to tell people from my own experience of playing with fire, you know.
Yeah.
That's an assistant fire chief, because he at least told me that fire is dangerous because
might not have paid attention. The chimney starter, the hot coals in it. I mean, there's no better way to start a fire except, I mean, I guess if you have one of those blowtorch things or whatever.
Right. But
the hot coals, when you dump that in, and even when you're dumping it in, and you've got the, you know, the sparks coming up and everything. I mean, you got to be careful.
Yeah, because I literally burnt my ankle, and I was swearing like a Norwegian farmer that just lost his cows, man. Because it was a wild ride, you know. So, but yeah, so I there's certain things that. Because that's the thing that I try to teach people just from my, what do we teach people in life? We teach people from our mistakes, really. We try to teach people that we've made a mistake. You know, we didn't know how to balance a checkbook. So what do? We try to teach our kids how to balance a checkbook. Cooking, I just try to teach my viewers things that I learned, you know, and you can't ever tell me anybody that first starts out, especially cooking, They burnt toast before when they first started. Heck yeah, they burnt toast. You know, everybody has those situations. So share it because other people learn from it. You know.
Yeah. So how many you go live on Sunday nights? And you get a couple of people you interview on. How do you are these people you just find on Facebook or just friends of yours? I know you had someone last week. Someone Sadie. I think they're out in California.
Yeah. I had Todd and Sassy.
Sassy, right.
They were good.
Yeah, they were good.
I had Kitchen Mofo, and he's a big, I mean, he's a good YouTuber, and he's Italian. So, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I subscribe to a lot of barbecue channels, but I like to watch other things because, I mean, I'm no professional barbecuer. Mm-hmm. Cook me under the table all day long, but I like to make spaghetti. You know what I mean? I like to make other stuff.
Right. You can't live on barbecue. Well, I guess.
Yeah. When it's 10 years 10, or 10 below zero. I mean, who the hell wants to go outside all the time? You know, we do. When you live in the North Woods or when you live in Northern states, you still do it because you like it and you force yourself to go out there with mittens and stockings and all this crap. And you go out there and do this, you know, but you don't always want to do it. So you kind of want to learn from different things. And I really like the Mofo. I mean, Mofo is a funny guy, you know? So I had him on, and then Todd and Sassy from Greenhorn Barbecue and Beer. So what really kind of happens is I'll reach out to somebody and say, hey, you want to be on? Yeah. I've got like Russ Jones. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. I do probably more YouTubers on my show. Mm-hmm. But I've had like some manufacturers. I got Brad Garrett is coming from Grill Greats. He's going to be on pretty soon. I've had Dan Corso from Oklahoma Joe's. He's the plant manager. So I have him come. I had him on. So I'm trying to get some manufacturers on my show too, because let's face it, I'm a YouTuber. YouTubers watch me. But my fans and my subscribers, I want to have a little bit of barbecue information for them. So I was doing way too many people. This is my BS time on Sunday nights. My show is really just about whatever heck I want to do. I'm not going to lie to you. I have no rhyme or reason to my show. I just do it. Well, I tell you that.
Like us.
You just kind of do it because you enjoy barbecue. So you do it. You know, and YouTube always gives you a thumbs up when you try to be more consistent on uploading and stuff like that. So I decided, because I have fancy equipment, I thought, well, I'm going to do my own show. I'm going to do some live stream stuff. And I'm an affiliate with Live Streaming Pros. I mean, if you ever want to learn how to live stream, go to those guys. I'm going to give them David a plug. David is become kind of a off and on conversation back and forth via email and texting. He's told me someday you're going to beat me. Well, no way, dude. You know what I mean? This is your profession, you know, but in all reality, my show is just about like contacting people that I want to have on and bring them on. I do like to do what I call my, Johnny Maggs, you guys probably are familiar with Johnny.
Yep. We had him on.
Yeah, so Johnny Meggs says, I said, well, I want to do something, you know, where it's just me. And he goes, well, call it Ricer Speakeasy. So I do a speakeasy once a month or something like where it's just me, no guest, because I did get hammered in the comments. All right, dude, I like these other people, but I subscribe to you, so I want to talk to you. So that's where I kind of do the my just me, and I'm not really about me, to be honest with you. It's hard for me sometimes to do those, but it's easier because I don't have to do audio checks and I don't have to do thumbnails and all that type of stuff that goes along with YouTube. But yeah, my barbecue talk, we can talk about dirt bikes if you really want to. If you want to talk about dirt bikes, we'll talk about it.
What about the Milwaukee Brewers? So we're baseball and BBQ. So, you know, you're Wisconsin. How's the Brewers going to do?
I think they'll still be mediocre. They'll come close. You know, they got some really good athletes, you know, and the last few years it's been good to be a Brewer fan, because I've been a Brewer fan and you watch until the All-Star break and then you quit watching because it's like, it's over. Man. But no, I mean, like Ryan Braun, I mean, yes, there's the steroid issue that came up and all that with him and all that, but I still like him as a person. I mean, people make big mistakes, and when you're talking about huge dollars, people do dumb things for huge dollars. Turnbull, I mean, we're going back a ways. I love that guy. He was like the Hanson brother. You remember him? He was our
coach. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I loved him because he just looked like a moron out there on the mound. It was wild and crazy, but I love that guy. That's the type of baseball I like. You know, Raleigh, I grew up in the Raleigh Fingers days, you know, and Robin Yount and Raleigh with those big old, you know, curls. Sure. Man, that was drop dead sexy. That dude knew how to throw a stash up, you know. So that was kind of like, you know, my era when I was a kid, because I played a lot of baseball. My boys play baseball. I don't want to tell you that it's not their favorite sport. Their favorite sport is football. I'm a former football coach, youth football coach. I retired now. Last year was my last year. But yeah, I mean, the Brewers, haven't had anything since the Braves left. My grandma was a big Braves fan and she became a Brewer fan. She goes, wow, the Braves left. This is Milwaukee, so we got to still root for them, you know. So I'm a Brewer fan. I'm a Brewer fan that doesn't have much, but we've got a couple, like, you know, wannabes. You know, we're a couple wannabes late now. I think they'll do okay. I mean, they got a good lineup. Their pitching is all right. The thing that I think that I've learned from watching enough, I don't watch a ton, but I watch enough. It's all about pitching, man. You get yep. Nationally, it's all about pitching. You know, if you got good pitchers, you can do.
But you got one of the great young hitters in the game today with Christian Yelich.
Yeah, and he's a class act if when I watch him. You know, he's just a cool cat. You know what I mean? It's if somebody that I'd want to be friends with, it's Christian. You just see him the way he is. He just seems like a down-to-earth, nice guy. You know, and he's my boys would say this is the wrong thing to say. He's a tryhard. My boys, oh, you're a tryhard. That's like negative. I say he's a tryhard because he cares. You can see that in him, you know. So the part of that, yeah, I'm hoping that it'd be fun to get back to the series. Hopefully these, you know, everybody wants their team to win a series. I'd like to see Milwaukee just do it one time. Because they're a small market, you know. I don't think baseball is set up the way it should be. Small markets get, you know, the lint out of the big markets' pockets, and okay, well, try to, you know, well, you're gonna have to eat vegetables for a couple weeks. Sorry, guys, you know, I don't think that it's really fair. I wish there was more salary cap stuff that was like, because I really think the NFL any year any team can win the championship. That's my thing with baseball. I think it's always been directed to the big dogs, you know. And, you know, Milwaukee, in the days when they used to fight the Yankees, that was fun. That was fun because I can't say I don't like the Yankees. I think they've always been a good team, man. I mean, you can throw money at it, but it was cool when the Brewers beat the Yankees and they went to the World Series, you know? Yeah, so that was, you know, there's not many moments for a Brewer fan, you know? Yeah, right. There really isn't, you know? CC Sabathia, you know, where does he go? Yankees. Really? Yankees. Yeah, couldn't you? I'd rather, hey, go to the Twins. Why didn't you go to the Twins?
Oh, that's so true. You know, it's funny because you mentioned Milwaukee and by the All-Star game, they're done. But at least you don't have a Family Guy episode where it's, here's the pitch.
And season's over.
And that's for Mets fans.
Because so far, Halloween's a bigger letdown than being a Mets fan.
Opening day, and here's the first pitch, and the season's over.
Okay. Yeah,
you got some iron sitting up, you know, and yeah, I hear you. You know, I mean, I will always say that New York people are way huger fans of baseball than Wisconsin. You know what I mean, we're not gonna be as big a baseball fans because. Those gosh darn Packers, you know, there's songs, about the Packers, you know, so they're always going to like probably hold a couple floats ahead of them, you know, but,
right. But yeah, but you got the best storyteller in all of baseball and Bob Uecker.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, we do, you know, and he needs a classic and he's still around, you know, and there's not many years left of old Bob, but you talk about a guy, you know, I must be in the front row, you know, I mean, just a classic character, and Milwaukee is truly blessed to have him as our sponsor. Yes. Yeah, we really are, because he could have probably gone other places, you know. So,
yeah,
very cool, very cool.
Well, we are very lucky that you joined us, right, sir? You are welcome back anytime. We're so happy that you came on. We're not pit masters; we're just fat, and that's our new slogan. We're not pit masters. We're just fat. And we think you're great.
So, and tell everybody where they can find you on Facebook and YouTube and any other social media that you have out there.
Well, you can find me on Instagram at DeadBrokeBBQ, and you can find me on YouTube at DeadBrokeBBQ, and you can find my Facebook page at DeadBrokeBBQ. Everything is DeadBroke. I'm a one-man show. My wife helps me a little bit, you know, with filming and stuff like that. But I'm a one-man show, so I don't have a lot of time to throw all these social medias and all these interwebs and stuff like that. But I do try to post something every couple weeks on YouTube. But, yeah, come over and check me out. I mean, you might get at least a little hoot out of me. I try to entertain you while I'm cooking and making barbecue.
Thank you. Well, we were very entertained.
Thank you, Philly.
Yeah. We appreciate it very much. Thanks again.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much.
And we thank Ricer. Thank you. That is terrific. I'm Neil. If you didn't hear part one, go back to
episode 67 and listen to part one. Part two was just as good. And we thank Ricer for his time. He's a really great guy.
And I'm just disappointed now that we don't have a part three. Are you sure we can't? We can't. Maybe we'll have him back on so we can get a part three.
I'm sure we can arrange that.
Speaking of barbecue, Jeff, I hope that our listeners are going to, and I want to remind them to go to baseballbbq.com. You know, they have incredible grilling tools, right? The spatula, the fork, the cutting boards. They also have shirts and hats. They're very, very nice and high quality. And I just want to remind everyone to go to baseballbbq.com.
Check it out. Check it out.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Guys, they'll personally engrave it. If you have any kind of, whatever you want to say, they can engrave it on the handle. They engrave for us our names on the handles, and they put our logo. And the customer service is fantastic. They're going to get you what you need. It makes a great gift. And it's still nice to just give a nice little gift if you are able to go to a barbecue and you wear your mask, of course. But if you're going and you want to know, what should I bring as a gift? It's a great gift, right? Always wonder, what should I bring? Well, it's very nice. Personalized. BaseballBBQ.com. Great stuff. Great people. Highly recommended. Check it out.
Check it out.
So, Jeff, right before we started the interview, the part two with Ricer, I said something which isn't something unique that hasn't been said about this season. This season, this baseball season, or whatever you want to call it. Look, you have been definitely against all these rule changes, right? Now, some of these rule changes would have happened no matter what. But the putting a runner on second base in extra innings, that wasn't going to happen this season.
Nope.
The seven-inning doubleheaders, each game in the doubleheader being seven innings, that wasn't going to happen.
Nope.
And I just want to go there for a minute.
Yeah, wait. You have a shovel? Because we're going down a big rabbit hole.
I you're right. And I have a feeling that we're going to have people that are going to definitely want to comment on that. So why don't you tell them how they could get in touch with the show?
Get in touch with us. You can call us 516-855-8214. Email us baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us. We're at baseballandbbq. Go on to our Instagram, baseballandbarbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Check us out on our webpage, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com.
The one thing you and I were talking earlier in the day, and I was talking about these seven-inning doubleheaders. Baseball is a game that is rich in tradition, and it's rich in stats. There are certain stats, certain records that people know. We don't have to go over those. We know there are certain ones that just everybody knows. Now, the one thing that I was thinking about is how many games have gone seven innings where the pitcher has a no-hitter going?
Plenty.
Okay.
Plenty.
It gets broken up in the eighth.
You hear dozens of these a year.
Right. Okay. He's carrying a no-hitter he's got a no-hitter in the seventh. And everybody.
You get the notification starting in the sixth inning on your phone from ESPN or whatever.
Right. These doubleheaders, and there are going to be numerous ones because, look, the Cardinals apparently, they lost so many days, and now they're saying how they're going to have to play all these doubleheaders. If a pitcher gets a no-hitter in seven innings, that's it. Game's over. Seven innings. They pitched a no-hitter.
Yep.
Is that a no-hitter?
It's a no-hitter. Complete game. That right. Didn't go nine innings. It went the length of the game that game was supposed to go.
Right. So that's going to count as a no-hitter?
I don't know.
I
assume it would.
How are we going to look at those stats?
Are you going to count the game as a win and a loss? So I guess you're going to have to, right?
Right. Yes. So I wonder, are we going to see some seven-inning no-hitters?
You might.
Really?
It's going to screw up the stats. That's for sure. You're going to have pitchers winning games where they won't, in nine-inning games, they won't, because the bullpen won't blow the games like they do nowadays in, you know, inning 7, 8, 9.
Right. And I would assume you're going to have more complete games, too.
Yeah, I would assume so, too.
Right? Maybe you won't have, you know, the Cardinals have been like, they didn't play, you know, when this airs, they'll be back to playing. But I think it was like 13 days in between, and they weren't practicing. They were holed up in, I guess, in a hotel or whatever. They were self-quarantining. So it's just and now they're talking about, and maybe this will be resolved also by the time this airs, but they're talking about how you're going to have a team that there's no way can play 60 games. Maybe they get 40 in.
Yeah.
So how are they going to qualify for postseason? Is it going to be
winning percentage? Yeah. Maybe. It's to be discussed.
And then, of course, if a guy hits 400,
Charlie Blackman,
the New York Times article today.
Yep.
Who is that on? I forget the player. On the Rockies.
Well, right now, Charlie Blackman.
Yeah. That's he's hitting like 5-something.
Yeah.
Over 60 games, you would think that it's got to be easier to hit. If you're hitting that at this point, you have a much better chance of hitting, you know, close to 400 or 400 over 60 games than over a full 162.
There's been a handful of players that hit 400 over 60 games. George Brett did it. Tony Gwynn done it. So it's possible.
Right. So if in those cases, if the season was 60 games, so would they have then, they were the last player to hit 400?
Well, if Blackman does it this season, he would have been the last player to hit 400.
Right. But I don't know how you don't put an asterisk next to that. It just...
Because there's no asterisks in any record book.
But this is such a strange season. Plus, you've got so many players opting out.
The thing is, if you go to Baseball Hall of Fame, it's all in a museum, and you can bet your bippy is going to be an exhibit on the 2020 baseball season and all the strange happenings.
Now, you're betting your bippy.
I'm betting my bippy.
Right. But let's get – you just gave a perfect segue, because I know that you have a baseball rant.
Yeah, I do. I'm getting a little tired. I don't know what's happening with other baseball pre- and post-game shows. I watch SNY, which is the Mets channel. I don't watch any other ones. I rarely watch the Yankee ones. But I've been noticing on this year's SNY, it's the storylines now is now gambling. Everything is now put into gambling. You can bet $100 to win $140 if, Jeff McNeil gets 2 hits in the game. Or if Steven Matz gets 5 strikeouts, you can bet under or over. What is going on? Gambling, now we know gambling is now based with the revenue, but you need to really force it down our throat. And, you know, and we know gambling is an addiction, right? And now they're encouraging us to make bets. This is ridiculous. And I just think it's just wrong. They shouldn't do it. I mean, you have these teenagers watching these games. Oh, let's place a bet. You know, ha, ha, ha. You know, it's going to ruin lives. It's just stupid to have it on. And I don't, you know, they're in bed with DraftKings and FanDuel. But I know it's part of life, but you don't need to really encourage it to happen. It's really stupid. And I wish SNY would stop doing it.
Yeah, they give stats, you know, betting lines and everything, right? Right?
Yeah, and on the commercials for these FanDuel and DraftKings, whatever they are, they have it. You have a gambling addiction, you call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Right. After they...
After they take all your money.
The commercial makes you like, even if you don't have it, you want to gamble. And then they, and if you have an addiction, you know, and if you don't, after hearing that commercial, you might. But yes. Anyway, all right. So, Jeff, why don't we take it away with D.B. Firstman with the Hall of Name.
D.B. Firstman has been a member of Sabre since the late 1980s. Besides the baseball blog Value Over Replacement Grit, D.B.'s work has appeared in ESPN.com, Bronx Banter, Baseball Prospectus, the Hardball Times, and in the Village Voice. D.B. is a graduate of St. John's University and lives in Queens, New York. D.B. has a new book called The Hall of Name. Welcome to Baseball and BBQ, D.B. Firstman.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, hold on, guys. All right, I'm gonna interrupt before we start this. DB, you should know on this podcast we have this habit of confessing when something we make confessions on this podcast, and usually it's me that confesses, and Jeff's you know the figure who I would go to confession. I'm gonna make a confession.
I'm Jewish, so you know confession.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. Confession is good for the soul, no matter what your religion. All right?
Okay.
I'm going to confess something.
Sure.
When I first got the book and was going to read, I didn't know what to expect. And I'm not, you know, with the, and we'll talk about, you know, with the words and the letters and changing things or whatever. I didn't know what to expect. And I've got, so I was kind of like, eh, all right, I'm going to read it. And I don't think I'm going to like it. And I want to tell you something. I'm going to confess. I absolutely love this book. Love with a capital L-O-V-E. I'm going to tell you, this is the perfect, perfect book for me. All right? Yay. And we're going to go into it in this interview. But I just want you to know, I had to confess. I had to tell you. Didn't expect to really, you know, just thought, okay, I love this book. Just want you to know that. And now we can move on.
Now we'll move on. DB, what got you interested in the unique names of baseball players? And I should let the audience know that you are the go-to person for Jason Stark on his useless information blog.
So. Jason relies upon various people for various aspects of baseball trivia and statistical knowledge, and I am his go-to person when it comes to baseball names. And he'll ask me questions like, what is the shortest surnamed pitching matchup that we ever had? Like, was it, and it might have been Dylan G and Cliff Lee from years ago. So yeah, Jason and I actually go back about 15 years. I used to send him little statistical quirks when he was working at ESPN for his useless information column. And now, so we've had a good little partnership, you know, helping each other out.
That's great. So what got you interested in the unique names of baseball players?
I've always been interested in words and the meanings of words, the origins of words, etymologies, definitions, roots of words. I'm just a total nerd when it comes to trivia and factoids about the English language. And it sort of extended itself. My love of baseball came from my father, because he would come over. My parents were divorced. He would come over, plop himself on the couch, turn on the TV, and turn on the Yankee game. And I quickly realized if I was going to relate to my father, it was going to be through baseball. And I grew up to be a baseball fan thanks to my father. So you sort of bring the two loves together, the love of words and the love of baseball. And it sort of metamorphosized into a love of baseball names and the origins of where the names came from and ethnicities and nationalities. And are there specific meanings to the names themselves? Like, how did Lastings Millage get his name? You know, why is he called Lastings? Because that's a pretty unique name. So it all started basically from love of words from very early in my childhood.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you're a Yankee fan, but I know you lived within walking distance of Shea Stadium.
Well, I'm not. I grew up a Yankee fan because my father was a Yankee fan. And I grew up in Jackson Heights, Queens, which is 10 minutes away from Shea. And when my father would come over and take me out to a ball game, because that was his favorite thing to do, we would take the 75-minute trip on the E train to the D train up to 161st Street, as opposed to taking the 10-minute subway, a 7-line trip to Shea Stadium. And I asked Dad, why can't we go to Shea? You know, it's still baseball. And he looked at me like I had three heads. Yeah, I would say I grew up a Yankee fan, but now I'm just a general baseball fan. I tend to listen more to the Mets broadcast because I like Gary, Keith, and Ron on TV. They make the game fun, and they're not homers, and they know a lot about, you know, pitching and defense, and they keep the game interesting even when it's a blowout.
So what I'm going to say, I think, and I've heard you in other interviews, I think you're underselling this, the book, and I'm going to tell you what, and what I love, and what our listeners love. We love history. We love baseball history. That I can't get enough baseball history. The current game is great. We talk about the current game. But baseball history is so rich, so wonderful. And we have listeners who just think, you know, we just had on John Shea, who did 24, you know, all about Willie Mays.
Right.
We just spoke to John Passaugh, all about Yogi Berra, you know, and then we've had books on, you know, authors with Oscar Charleston and just all sorts of history. Your book is filled with history, and it's current history. You know, some of the players have just recently played. Some played years ago. You had the greatest, what some people consider the greatest shortstop of the 19th century. But the facts and the history that you bring up about these players, forget the crazy names. I mean, it just, they have crazy names, but the history and the facts, that's what I couldn't stop reading. I just loved all of that. And I wasn't expecting that. And all the research that you did, I salute you. And I think you have written an incredible book.
Thank you. I didn't set out for this book to be sort of like a ha-ha, poking your finger, you know, making fun of these names. I wanted it to be something. I wanted it to be something more. I wanted it to be something of a reference book or some sort of educational value of bringing these players' lives to life and explaining who these people were on and off the field. And I managed to achieve that by some of these players only had a cup of coffee, you know, or less than a cup of coffee.
Right.
They had a sip of coffee. And they had a sip of coffee 130 years ago. You're right. I did have players from the late 19th century, early 20th century. And those profiles are largely the result of work that was done by people like David Nemec of Sabre, who wrote baseball biography profile books of late 19th century players, earlier 20th century players, and by researchers at Sabre who contribute to something called the Baseball Bio Project, which is basically a volunteer-driven an online encyclopedia of baseball players and executives and coaches and managers, anybody related to baseball. These volunteers, Sabre members, painstakingly go through and research every aspect of these players' lives and put it down, you know, and memorialize it for everybody to read. And there's over 5,000 profiles in the Baseball Bio Project. So a decent portion of my research was enhanced and fortified by the Baseball Bio Project and by the biographical profiles of David Nemec and a few others. I also relied upon Ancestry.com for, you know, the family history and things of that nature, who they married, how old they were, how many kids they had. And then Newspapers.com was also very helpful in terms of just origin stories of their names and things of that nature. So really the book was supposed to be sort of a hybrid between humor and education. And I think I got it.
Yeah. Oh, you got it. You got it. Yes. I'm telling you, you got it. Jeff, I love it.
Yes.
I seriously, I know, I can't stop. But
yeah.
I recommend this book highly. It's not, you don't have to, you can skip around. And right. This is one of those books, people are going to take this in the bathroom with them. You know, this is perfect. You know, this is, you could pick this up and just read a chapter, read a player. And when you have this knowledge, then you're going to talk about it. Fantastic.
Well, it is a book that you should pick up and read a little bit and put back down, because it is very it's kind of dense. There is a lot of knowledge in the pages, and the book is organized so that the players are grouped based on whether they have rhyming names or scatological names or names that sound really, you know, melodious. Mm-hmm. The individual player profiles are constructed so that you can pick it up and put it down and not feel right. Like you're losing your place.
Yeah, one of the things that I learned in this book, I was under the impression that you were giving the given names, which, you know, you think in a book of names that they were given names. I was really surprised that Booth Bonser, he actually, it was not his given name, but he actually changed his name legally to be Booth Bonser. I think Oco Chris did the same thing, right?
He was the first name profiled, yes.
Right.
I chose to stick with their given names for the most part. With a couple of exceptions, people like Kai Kai Kyler, the famous outfielder from the 20s and 30s, his given name is memorable enough. It's Hazen Shirley Kyler. His mother's maiden name was Shirley, so that's how he got his name. So I didn't want to do nicknames. I wanted to stay away from like Catfish Hunter and Blue Moon Odom, and you know, where the nickname is the person. I wanted to focus mainly on given names, and because there's a real intent there on the part of parents to impart some history to their child. You know, whether it's naming their child after their grandfather, or you know, after a Egyptian god of some sort. Yeah, so I really wanted to get a sense of, you know, these people from. Not from a nickname, but from a real given name.
Well, I would love to just throw out some names from the book and just give us what about the name intrigued you. Maybe there's, I know most of these names have an interesting stat or not, you know, fact about them. So let me just throw one out to you that people will know the name, Coco Crisp.
Covelli, his given name is Covelli Crisp, and I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, that his sister pegged him as Coco because it reminded her of the cereal Coco Crispy.
I love it.
So, yes, but his given name is Covelli Crisp, but nobody calls him Covelli, it's Coco. And he also has a neck piercing, which is kind of interesting. He has a little like diamond stud in his neck that you could see when he was batting, and it was a little off-putting at times. But so,
what about Ferris Fane? I thought that there was an interesting fact about his father.
Oh, Go ahead.
His father came in second place in 1912 in the Kentucky Derby.
Right.
Right?
Yes. That's interesting, yeah.
I know that our listeners, they love stuff like that. And then he was arrested, not his father. Ferris Fane was arrested for growing marijuana in 1985. And then he was arrested again. So I think he did like a community service or whatever, but then he was arrested again for marijuana. And he went to federal prison.
That's right. Ferris Fane's day off.
Well, one of the names that we're familiar with is J.J. Poots. But being Jewish, I call him Putz because that's what it looks like. what I thought very interesting about his chapter, and I love the facts at the end, the ephemeria. I probably pronounced that wrong, but he was a roommate of Tom Brady. Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah.
Boom. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
So, yes, it was a lot there, you know, between Wikipedia and newspapers.com and just a lot of digging and cold and drafty places. I found some interesting little notes about some of these players. So, yes, they were roommates at Michigan.
Yeah. And the right pronunciation is Poots, right?
Poots.
Right.
AJ Poots. And it's also Sean Figgins, not Joan Figgins.
The book is split up into chapters. So it begins with baseball poets. The names are kind of rhyme, right?
They're rhyming, or yes.
Yeah.
Or they're alliterative. Yeah.
And then for our deviant listeners, and we definitely have a couple of those because I got a co-host that might be a little deviant. For our deviant listeners, we had there's a chapter, Dirty Names.
And cheap.
Which we'll talk about. And there's numerous chapters after that. So I love how it's split up like that. But let's talk about the player, Ed Head. Do you remember what's special about Ed Head?
That his name rhymes and
but you know what's good? Well, I have I read the book recently and you could tell how much I loved it because
and I'm working on the second book, so
I can't wait. I can't wait. Ed Head had a bad accident. He almost lost his left arm. He was going to the doctors wanted to amputate it. And he said no. And apparently he had an uncle, I think, who had a special.
Right.
And he said, you know, the arm could be saved. And they did. He saved the arm, but he learned to throw right-handed.
Right. He was injured in a bus accident when he was just starting to be known for pitching. And he basically lost use of his arm. His original arm for pitching, so he switched arms and became a pitcher nonetheless.
Can you imagine that? I mean, I can barely use. I'm a righty. I could barely use my left hand. So he was good enough to switch arms and become a major league pitcher with the other arm. That's unbelievable. And
he's not quite Pat Venditti, but he's close.
Right.
And he apparently had some bad OCD because he had an unusual superstition. What was that? He had something about if it was his fourth win or something. It was something he had to tap four times or he had to say something.
Yeah.
Right when he was in the bullpen. What was that, DB?
I think the pitching coach said basically. You know, you have to get four outs, so tap your glove four times or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting.
DB, I got a question for you that, you know, a lot of these names in the book are not familiar to baseball fans. Was that some type of concern to you?
It was to a certain extent. I mean, but I didn't want to write about, for example, and I mentioned this in the introduction, I didn't want to write about Mickey Mantle. Mickey Mantle's a great name, but everything has been written about Mickey Mantle. You can read Jane Levy's book about Mickey Mantle and learn everything you need to know or ever wanted to know about Mickey Mantle. I can't add anything to the story of Mickey Mantle. I could add to the story of Mickey Morandini if I wanted to.
Right.
Some of these players, and I specifically looked for players whose careers had already ended, so that their playing careers were a fixed entity, and I could focus on. I didn't have to worry about what did they do in 2019 because you know I'm working with deadlines and I've got to get the book out to proof and things of that nature. So I did focus on players of an earlier era. And some of these players you never heard of before, or most average fans do not know Johnny Dickshot, Jack Glasscock, the only Nolan. I mean, these people, you know, the players themselves, you don't necessarily know them, but I wanted to try, you know, to say the entry point for your introduction to the player is their name. That name makes you sit up and take notice. And then their little story gets you to understand who the player is so that you have an appreciation that he's more than just a silly name or a weird name. He's got a real career and life behind him. I mean, and these players were people. They're regular people like you and me. There was alcoholism. There was infidelity. There was murder. There was suicide. You know, they went through the same stories that every other person went through. You know, so I wanted to bring out the human side of them, both positive and negative.
You went really deep into some of these stories. You went to after each name, there's a, like you said, a little biography on them, some what they did. You also have the best day of their career, which is really great. One of the names, the anagrams. How'd you go for the anagrams?
I love anagrams. I'm a tournament Scrabble player, as if I'm not nerdy enough. So I play Scrabble, and I love to anagram. I have anagram software so that when you throw in a given string of letters, it will rearrange them into a coherent, you know, phrase of some sort. So there is a player. There was a Texas Rangers pitcher named Warner Madrigal, who pitched for the Rangers in 2008 and 2009, and he wasn't very good. So his nickname, his anagrammed name, was very apt. It was Marginal Reward. So,
you know, you talk about players and ones that are known. I mean, we have a feature on our show that we do sometimes that's lesser known Hall of Famers. So, you know, they're all, you know, they were good enough to get in the Hall of Fame, but a lot of them, you know, aren't known to anyone. And we'll talk about them and we'll read their plaque and stuff. We don't pick, obviously, you know, Mickey Mantle or Yogi Berra. We go for the ones that are not known. That's interesting to us. One of the interesting facts, I think it was this player, and I guess maybe I'm the deviant because I keep going to the dirty name section. So it might be me. I might be. But Pete Lecoq,
yes.
his father, you wanna take us down that road?
All right. First of all, Pete Lecoq's father was the longtime host of Hollywood Squares, Peter Marshall. And I believe Pete's given name is Pierre. So there you go. But my favorite factoid about Pete Lecoq is that in what turned out to be Bob Gibson's final major league game, Lecoq hit his only grand slam of his major league career. And at the end of the game, Gibson basically said, you know, when Pete Lecoq hits a grand slam off of you, it's time to retire. And that's what he did.
See what I mean? That's what I'm talking about. There, just the one little fact. You know, if I was in a bar and I said to someone, you know, tell me who's, you know, father, I could win a bet with that.
Yeah.
You know, nobody would ever know that. You know, that his father was the host of the Hollywood Squares.
Well, I'm bad.
So.
Yeah. Another player in the book, Sibby Sisti. His given name was Sebastian Daniel Sisti. And what I got, the fun fact I came out of that, listen, he was in the movie The Natural, playing a part of the Pittsburgh manager. Who knew that? That's a great tidbit.
Right. Well, you do have players who come on as technical consultants for movies and TV shows about baseball. Natural isn't necessarily my favorite baseball movie of all time, but it has its moments. I'm more of an eight men out person, even though it's factually
inaccurate.
Right. What about Hanson Horsey? Love that name. Played one game and then he became an umpire? A long-time umpire?
Yes, he did. yes, we have players who... We have people in the book who really didn't distinguish themselves on the playing field, but instead, I believe it was Johnny Nee who became a scout, a top scout. And then we have players who became executives, instead of having a great career. And Hanson Horsey is one of those players. And back in those days, there was not such a distinct line between the player's side of the field and the umpiring side of the field. You know, you think back to the origins of baseball, who were the umpires? But sometimes they were players who weren't playing normally. They didn't have an organization of umpires. So,
Then you have one, Orville Overall.
Oh, yeah.
Big groundhog because he was born on February 2nd. And then you see, you are definitely like us because you did a line at the end and you said his father was a hotel keeper at one time. And then you said he might say to someone, how was your overall experience? That's right in line with us.
Yeah, I do tell some dad jokes, in the book.
BB, were you able to get in touch with any of the living players? Did you ever speak to them about their names?
I did. I spoke to the great grandson of Kai Kai Kyler. It turned out to be a mutual friend who works with the great-grandson of Kai Kai Kyler. So I spoke to him, and I asked him about his great-grandfather's supposed stuttering problem. Is that how he got the nickname Kai Kai? And it turned out, the great-grandson said, no, that's an absolute falsehood. They called him Kai Kai because it sounded like Kyler. You know, it was sort of shortening the last name, and that's what the outfielders called him when it was, when the ball was coming towards him. They would shout Kai Kai, and that's how he got his last name. I also tried to reach out to John Wackenfuss, the catcher for the Tigers in the late 70s, because I wanted to get into the origin story of his last name. I was trying to pin down exactly where, beyond ethnicity, what part of the country his last name would come from. Unfortunately, Mr. Wackenfuss is, I believe, suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's at this point, so I wasn't able to talk to him. I did reach out to Larvell Blanks, who was a middle infielder in the 1970s and 80s, I think for the Braves. And I wanted to know his origin story for the name Larvell, because I couldn't find anything anywhere, newspapers, baseball cards. I couldn't find the origin story for Larvell. So I sent a self-addressed stamped envelope with a request saying, please, I'm writing this book. I want to include you. Could you send me some information, either email or send back the envelope? And 7.5 months later, I get the self-addressed stamped envelope back. I open up the envelope. There's no explanation of his name, but there is an autographed baseball card. So I didn't speak to many of the players. I mean, a lot of them were no longer with us.
But right.
Yeah. So.
Now, DB, you self-published this book?
I did, yes.
So you had to put a lot of money into this.
Yeah, I'm hoping to break even. I'm close, but yeah, it's a labor of love. It was a passion mm-hmm. project of mine. I had the idea for the book 7 years ago, and I was friendly with John Thorne, the official Major League Baseball historian, and he got me in touch with a couple of niche publishers of baseball books like Skyhorse and McFarland and places like that, and they all said the same thing. We love the concept for the book. We just don't think it's going to sell. And 6 years, 7 years later, I'm looking for something to write about, you know, because, you know, I've been blogging for all these years. I've written articles and I wanted to do something a little more robust. And I thought, well, why don't I do the baseball profile book, baseball name profile book? And this time, you know, by this time, self-publishing world has exploded. Mm-hmm. It's become much more accessible to the common person. And so, yeah, I've laid out a good amount of money to make this happen. But, you know, it's, you know, the reviews have been very, very positive. And the feedback I've gotten has been very positive. And, you know, the money has, you know, trickled in. But, you know, it wasn't it wasn't really all about the money. It was about seeing if I could do a book, you know, mm-hmm. you know, which is a very dedicated, labor-intensive process. And, you know, so that was the reward at the end of all of the effort.
And if people wanted to purchase the book, where can they get it? And could they get a signed copy if they wanted that?
Yes, they can. They can get a regular copy of the book through Amazon.com or Audible.com or their local independent bookstore. If they want a signed copy, they should reach out to me at my email address, dbfirstman@gmail.com, and I will tell them how to send me $20, and I will inscribe the book. I will sign it and to whomever you want, and I will mail it back to you, postage paid, and you'll have your own autographed book.
And I noticed that you're part of the Pandemic Baseball Book Club, and there's a link on your profile where it takes you right to a bookshop where you can purchase the book as well.
Yes, yes. So we're part of a whole crew of people who are trying to make the best of a bad situation. It's really interesting. You come out with a book and you put all this work into it, and then the pandemic hits. And it's like, well, you're trying to sell a book, but, you know, I was supposed to do a major book signing at Foley's, the bar.
We know it well.
And, you know, and of course that got canceled, and now the Foley's is closing. Well, now people have a lot more time to read because they're indoors and they're sort of stuck in their quarantine. So it's a hard time to sell a book, and that's why the Pandemic Baseball Book Club came together.
Well, we're big supporters of the pandemic. Sorry, Jeff, but we're big supporters of the Pandemic Baseball Club. Big supporters of your book, and I really hope that people will buy it. I don't care if there's no baseball now. If you love baseball history, if you love just interesting tidbits, I mean, we only touch the surface.
Right.
You've got to buy this book. Because I know you did this for love. Listen, we do this podcast out of love as well. So we understand that. We want you to at least break even, whatever. If we could put some shekels in your pocket, why not? And, you know, but the book, I mean, if it wasn't such a great book, I wouldn't tell people to buy it. Terrific. And Jeff, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Phoebe, we appreciate your time. I got one or two more questions I wanted to ask you. I'm just curious. This is obviously a book of interesting names, unusual names. Do you know of any surnames that are really the most common in baseball? Like, you know, Smith and Jones. You know, what's like the most common names in baseball? Do you have that off the top of your head? Johnson.
I think Johnson might be the most common baseball surname, although with the growing proportion that are from the Dominican Republic, that might be changing. But I still think it might be Johnson at this point.
Randy Johnson, Walter Johnson, they don't suck. I'm like Tony Suck, who is actually a name in the book. I always knew of Van Lingo Mungo from the song, Van Lingo Mungo. Right. And reading his chapter in the book was very interesting. I didn't know his temper, he was always fined and whatnot. But that was a really good chapter, and his anagram is Vile Man Long Gun. So, if you know the song Van Lingo Mungo, I suggest you read that chapter. Right. Yeah.
You don't want to hear me sing it.
Me neither. DB, anything else you want to tell us about the book? Anything else you want to promote? Please, go ahead.
I'm on Twitter at Dianagram, D-I-A-N-A-G-R-A-M. And I'd love to have more followers. I'm tweeting about baseball when baseball happens. And there's also real life that I tweet about, too. So I'm really appreciative of the time that you've afforded me here. And I'm thankful for having a forum like this. And I wish you guys continued success with your entity here.
Thank you. The name of the book is The Hall of Name, Baseball's Most Magnificent Monikers, by D.B. Firstman, and the forward is by, like we said, Jason Stark, and we wish you the best of luck, D.B. Thank you very much.
Thank you, D.B., so much.
And one thing before you go, we need a promise from you.
Yeah.
If you come out with another book,
yes,
you must come on here to promote it.
Of course.
Okay, that's all. That's all. We have it recorded, so you're coming back.
Maybe I'll even dedicate the book to you guys.
There you go.
Wow. To the deviant co-hosts.
Yes. There you go.
Baseball and barbecue.
There you go.
I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you, D.B. And we thank D.B. for joining us for The Hall of Name. That was a great book. I enjoyed reading that. I like the anagrams, the origins, the stories in there. Really cool.
Definitely recommend. And it would be very nice to give DB the support because it is a self-published book. And I'm sure that DB can use all the sales, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
And the artwork on the cover is just fantastic.
Yeah. Now that's definitely one to put in your collection. And it's one, you know, you'll pick up, you'll read some, you'll put it down. You don't have to go all over the place in the book. You don't have to follow any kind of page.
Right.
Uh-huh. Very, very good.
And with that, we thank you for joining us. Glenn, any final words?
Hope everybody is enjoying some nice weather. Get out there. Socially distance, but barbecue.
Absolutely. And we're going to go out with our favorite song, Baseball Always Brings You Home. See ya.